This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. So many of our mainstream cultural values are shaped by film, television, and more recently, social media. Pop culture shapes our worldviews, making some things acceptable and others anathema. Today, as part of our ongoing coverage of reparations, we'll turn to pop culture narrative shaping of reparations. Writing in Yes Magazine as part of our series, Realizing Reparations, is my guest, Jonita Davis. She's a film and culture critic, author, and freelance writer, covering the intersections of pop culture, identity, education, parenting, and more. And she's the founder and editor at large of The Black Cape. She's written several books, and her latest is We Gonna Be Black Today, Exploration of Black Nerd Culture. Her story for Yes is called How Pop Culture Shapes Reparations. Welcome to the program, Jonita.
Hi.
So first, let's talk about how we see these ideas that become mainstream because pop culture sort of picks up ideas that are floating around, but then kind of feeds into the cycle of mainstreaming them even more, right? How important, let's set the stage for how we think about this issue by you telling me why you think pop culture is so important when we talk about such heavy issues as reparations.
Because pop culture is how we reach everyone. I mean, once it hits that, it's almost like it's the underground, you know, it's something that, you know, it's cool, it's hip, it's only certain people know about it. But once it reaches like the mainstream, which is what pop culture is, that's that it kind of picks up what's actually there, as you said, in our mainstream. Once it hits that wider discussion, that's something that everybody, you can't deny it. You can't walk away from it. You can't get away from it. Case in point, this discussion of reparations, the way it is, it used to be just 20 years ago, you could turn your head and say, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to see anything about that. Today in 2024, you go on TikTok, you go on Instagram, you go on TV, you know, even Netflix, and you're going to see something about reparations. You can't get away from it. And that's what pop culture is. Pop culture, it kind of gets those ideas in it, and it kind of amplifies them so that no one can get away from them. Everybody has to see them, and therefore everybody has to form an opinion on them, and everybody has to, you either have to act or don't. But, you know, it kind of forces things into our face, if that makes sense.
So you explored for the story for Yes the ways in which the idea of reparations have popped up in pop culture, in television, in film, and in documentary, in fiction, and of course in social media, as you mentioned, TikTok and Instagram. But what was really fascinating for me was that one of the first instances in at least modern pop culture that you dug up was 24 years ago on NBC's The West Wing in the year 2000, in just the very first season, where there's a discussion around reparations. And it isn't until, 3 years later that Dave Chappelle then brings it up. So tell me a little bit about these early instances of the idea of reparations coming up in a pop culture narrative.
They sort of start like most taboo topics do, most taboo, what do you call them? Most controversial topics do. You'll see something, you know, like a blip, a mention, a dialogue back and forth as it happened in The West Wing. And it usually happens in the most cutting edge shows. West Wing was so popular. It was the cutting edge political drama at the time. It was something everybody was watching. Even some of the dialogue people were repeating, you know, so it was like the cool thing that was happening. And that seems to be where these controversial taboo topics are kind of broached, you know, and kind of put out there, especially if there's something that we really should be talking about and we haven't been. And so that's why I think that it pops up in TV shows and things like that, the most popular ones first, to kind of almost like testing the waters. And then comedians like Dave Chappelle, and he was the biggest one that I could find at that around that time, but he wasn't the only one that was kind of broaching the topic of reparations. But he kind of picks up those topics that are controversial, that he knows are going to, I don't know if I could say it this way, but piss people off. He knows that that's what's going to happen, but he also knows that these are thinking topics that we got to consider. Even if he broaches the topic in a way that's offensive, okay, but then it gets people talking about why it's offensive, why we need to say more, what was done wrong, what was done right. And I'm not saying that, you know, that maybe he's conscious of this happening, but the way comedy works and the way media works and the way pop culture works, that's what happens. It broke it. It kind of, you know, there's like drops of these little topics early on, right, to kind of get people thinking.
And of course, it should be mentioned of Chappelle, and you point out in your story that he's not somebody who's necessarily in any way a bastion of progressive values, given his transphobia that comes up in his act these days. But and even on reparations in 2003, he sort of made a joke about it, right? But he did bring it up. He portrayed Black people stereotypically.
Yes, his joke, it was really off color the way he did it, because he did hit on some really rough stereotypes as he was kind of doing the skit. But again, it's a point of conversation. It gets you talking. Why is this wrong? What could he have done better? And as we're discussing that, we're talking about reparations. We're actually talking about it. And going back to the West Wing, people are like, why are they talking about something like reparations in this show that's popular, that everybody's watching, no matter, you know, across the demographics, everybody loves it. Why is it there? Why? It gets people talking about why did they broach it? Should they have broached it? Did they do it in the right way? Either way, whatever the criticism is, it's being discussed. Reparations is being discussed. And just like that, it's kind of dropped into the discussion. Unfortunately, it took another 20 some odd years before it kind of really just blew up and sort of was seen in a lot of other mainstream places.
Right. So. And in fact, let's talk about how that has happened, because it feels like it's not a coincidence that as we've had greater visibility, more opportunities for Black filmmakers and creatives in the Hollywood industry, we've seen more reparations mentions and more tackling of the subject. Is that fair to say to you, that those two have gone hand in hand, that as Hollywood has become more racially diverse, we're seeing these ideas like reparations becoming more commonplace?
Well, I mean, that's really the point of wanting diversity in Hollywood, to get the stories that didn't matter to the people who dominated before. Because why this, I mean, I'm going to try to say this as, you know, kindly as I possibly can, but why would white people care about reparations? They don't have anything to do with it. I mean, there's a social responsibility, yes. But personal, no. It's not something that in white households that they're talking about all the time. In Black households, reparations is a topic that comes up either jokingly, seriously, or, you know, in discussions about, you know, enslaved ancestors, in discussions about, you know, family property that was taken. There's like so many ways that in Black households we discuss this. So naturally, when you get more and more Black creators telling stories in Hollywood, you're gonna get stories about reparations, because that's what we grew up with. You know, that was like, it's almost like it's one of those topics that's ingrained into our, you know, our social upbringing. Again, it's why we need more diversity, because these are topics that were never gonna come up had we not gotten people who they were topics that they were important to them.
So there's history, historical narratives, right? Because the idea around reparations is really based on historical harm, although, of course, there's ongoing harm. And some reparations efforts address reparation for harm that started generations ago and continues today. So films tackling history, I imagine, may be sort of indirectly referring to reparations, even if they don't overtly do so. And some of them, even fictional films like Jordan Peele's film, which is set in modern day America, but really brings up so many tropes from, you know, times that were more overtly racist, let's put it that way. Would you feel that the idea around reparations gains more traction, even if creatives, filmmakers, television showrunners are not explicitly talking about reparations, but they're making the case for it inadvertently or indirectly, rather?
Oh, yeah. It's almost like seeding the idea, you know? Reparations is one of those topics where if you say the word, people are just kind of like, I don't want to talk about that. You know, that's controversial. It's one of those words that has become so controversial that, you know, some people don't want to talk about it. But if you get at it indirectly, there's so many ways that reparations as a concept can be broached in art, especially like film and TV and media, without saying the word. And I think that's what we've been seeing is that, you know, I think filmmakers is like Jordan Peele, they know people, when you say that word, they're automatically going to turn it off, or they're automatically going to say, I'm not watching that. Or, you know, I don't want to get involved in that. Or, you know, we really also live in a world where there's so much political polarization that people, they're exhausted. So nobody wants to like, so if you come at it like directly, it's probably going to turn your audience off. But if you have this concept happening, Jordan Peele was one you said, but I'm going to go to the Watchmen television series that came at reparations in a futuristic sci-fi type of way. Where it actually ended up in the season, it broached the idea of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it broached the idea of, you know, this futuristic society where we live, where, you know, okay, they're going to be talking about this. And they eventually came to the idea of reparations, but it wasn't at the very beginning. It just kind of built up to that. And I think that that's kind of what filmmakers are doing.
Infiltrating the conversations in ways. So prepping their audiences first, if you will.
Prepping the audience. Yeah. And I think it also, like I said, I'll go back to, people are like exhausted because of the political polarization. Yeah. Black people as well, you know, and it's our reparations is kind of our wheelhouse. It's our topic. And not totally, because there's so many other, you know, the indigenous people, and you've got the Japanese, and there's so many other topics, ways that reparations needs to be discussed in America. But I feel like with the political polarization, just as one example, it gives a reason for filmmakers to say, how can I talk about this without talking about this?
Right.
You know,
for those,
it's like the TikTok. It's like those, excuse me, sorry. It's like that TikTok, the famous TikTok. How do you say this without saying this?
Right.
Yeah.
Those people who are open to the idea, whose minds have already been prepped, if you will, can find documentaries about the subject, which you do cover in your story as well. Even though documentaries are nonfiction, how do they, kind of feed and fuel the move to accept reparations as a mainstream idea whose time has come? Tell me about some of the documentaries that you cover, some of the documentary filmmakers who you spoke to in writing your story.
Well, I think that documentaries, once the idea of reparations is kind of broached, it's kind of dropped in, it's kind of seeded, people who want to look for more information, it's there. Just like the documentary, The Descendant, about the slave ship, the Clotilda, and how that, you know, just learning the idea how that ship came to the U.S. after slavery was banned, and how those people that off that ship actually came and populated this city, this town. And just going through, the filmmakers go through the history of that town, and they tell a story of how we got from enslaved people to people who are now impoverished. And they connect the dots between the harm then and the harm now. So it's like almost like the documentaries give, they give additional, they give that additional information. They connect those dots, and they make it to where, you know, okay, so you want to know more. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to give it to you in the many ways that it happens. Erica Alexander was one who covered a reparations in a town in Illinois who was paying reparations to its people. I think these filmmakers find these stories, and they're telling these stories. They're telling the story of reparations through small stories of people and communities. And once it's almost like they're humanizing the topic. So when people, you know, when I see Jordan Peele's movie and I'm like, he's talking about something there. There's something there. Or if I see The Watchmen and I'm like, what is this thing what is this Tulsa thing? What is this reparations thing? And I go to something like The Descendant, and I see, oh, so this is what this is on a community level. So then we're looking at this from the perspective of almost like a point that has been humanized. It's no longer just a political topic that's out there that has nothing to connect with us. Because one of the things that The Descendants does is it also connects the white descendants of the Clotilda slave ship, you know, the owners of the ship, the captain of the ship. It shows how even those people then, how their descendants now have to deal with this. So it makes it to where this is a human problem. This is not just political. It's not just some concept anymore. It's not just something
it's not abstract. It's real.
Yes, it's real. And so the documentaries do that. They take these small stories of, you know, a community, and they show us. And once we see that there's so many of them, we start seeing, wow, this is okay. It's actually a thing. And I think to me, it sort of knocks the controversy off the word. We can say reparations now because we know it's a human, you know, it's a human element. It's not abstract. It's something that's real. It's something that has real harm attached. It's something that has real faces attached. And it's something that really needs to be addressed.
So let's talk about social media. Let's wrap up our conversation with how creatives of color especially bring up ideas that don't necessarily make it often enough onto television and film through social media, right? Because even though the topic is gaining traction, it's still rare to hear about reparations in our TV shows and in our popular films. And that's when people, you know, it used to be people would take to Twitter. Twitter is now sort of been on its last legs. And so TikTok is the new Twitter, maybe, especially for Black creators on social media. How do folks bring up the topic of reparations? I imagine they do it in pretty creative ways on TikTok, right?
Oh yeah, very creative. TikTok is a place that you go nowadays when there's something that you want to know that maybe there's not a lot of people who know about it. Maybe there's not a lot of information out there about it. So reparation, it makes it perfect for talking about reparations. It's something where you don't have to mince words. You can say what you want to say, and the creators have gotten so creative about, you know, the way they put it in, and they make it to where it's like small bursts of information and it goes directly to the point, and it makes it to where, and they connect all the dots between the concept and the humanity, like the documentaries do, but they do it in a short span of time. So they have to be more creative about it. So they do it in the form of stories you didn't know, you know, or, you know, maybe, what was the real story behind such and such, or, you know, and things like that, or what you need to know about reparations, or, you know, there have been stories that I've seen where they connected reparations to people today, you know, how this person will be connected and that person. So it's kind of like, if you want to get a hard and fast, you know, kind of education about what reparations are, TikTok and Instagram and social media, that's where you go, because these creators are, that's what they do. They're going to get you the information. It's going to be creative, but it's going to be the truth, and it's going to be fast.
And clever. This is what I love about some of the creatives on TikTok. They're so clever. Well, Jonita, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. This is a great conversation, and we'll post a link to your story at Yes Magazine from our website on Rising Up. Thank you so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My guest has been Jonita Davis. She's a film and culture critic, author, and freelance writer. Her latest book is called We Gonna Be Black Today, Exploration of Black Nerd Culture. We've been discussing her story for Yes, titled How Pop Culture Shapes Reparations. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.